Hi, good afternoon. I have to also thank the Gordon family because they're my hostesses, or with the mostesses, really have made our trip here unbelievable. We feel like we've been enveloped by the family, and we have seen Melbourne in a way that we never would have seen it had we gone to hotels and touristy things, and we've just experienced it through our entire beings. Okay, so what prompted this conversation, iPod, iPhone, iPad, therefore I am, is a couple came to me after they were married for about 3 months and they wanted to get divorced. Now, I'm a neuropsychologist. Neuropsychologists is people who study the relationship between the brain and behavior. But I also have a private practice, and because I'm... I don't know why it's because. Because I like things that are odd and off the wall and need out-of-the-box thinking, I get some of the cases that I get. Vicky has been... We've known each other for many years, and she has seen some of the cases that I get. If I was a physician, I would do emergency room medicine, which is, I like the blood and guts, but once you figured out what the problem is, get them to a different department. So anyway, this young couple came, and everything was right. They had done everything the right way. They got married the right way. They were on only Simplus. Do you have that here? And they signed up to the right places. They had it in the right hall. They did everything right. And the only thing was wrong was when they were living together, they could not communicate. They used to text message each other from room to room, and they just felt they had no idea who this person was, and they don't know how they got into this mess, and they felt that they were both really nice people, but there was no contact. They had no way of dealing. The text messages from before they were married were really very cute, and they were... They didn't use Facebook, but they were using the text messaging as a way of communicating and being kind of intimate. In a way, I guess, that from people can be intimate or more intimate without really having any face-to-face contact. And there they were, married in the same apartment, and they could not figure out how to solve their problems. So it got me to thinking, and I started to think, what is it when people say, oh, it's we're going to go do sports together? Well, I don't know if you know this, I'm sure, young people, this thing called we, it's probably out already, Xbox is in and we is out, is we still in? I don't know. We is a Japanese company that you can play games and box and ping pong and tennis and whatever on the machine. So you can be standing next to somebody and as if doing sports with them or as if doing something, but you're really playing against the machine. And again, it's cheating you and it's saying, hey, we're doing something together, but it's not really together. And so, as I said, I started to think of when I was working with these people, I said, you know, you have choices. You can turn the machine off on Shabbat. You don't use the machine. You can turn it off and you can talk to each other. Well, they couldn't express themselves in words. And then I got this poster, which is How Do You Feel Today, which has the faces, feeling faces, I call them. And they have faces, and they have expressions. And we started to use these faces to begin to build a vocabulary of emotions and feelings, the vocabulary that they had never used before. Sure, they knew what all these words were. They were intelligent people. They were working people. They were fine. But they never really used them. They could read them and understand them, but they never really tried to connect between the word and the emotion and themselves. And where were they at any given moment? Where were they feeling? And as I said, I'm sure many of you have heard the Confucius saying, it's better to give someone a fishing rod than to give him a fish. So the Rambam has a similar saying. I wouldn't say the Rambam has, somebody will kill me, but it's not similar, it's different. Anyway, he says tzedakah is giving someone a job, not just money, which Confucius must have learned from the Rambam, though I think Confucius is older, but we're not going to get into that. Okay, so we're going to talk about the brain, because essentially, I just want to back up and say, I was living in Los Angeles. I was already a psychologist, and I was working in the school system there. And I felt I didn't understand what I was seeing. I didn't understand enough. So the way I deal with that is I go back to school. So I went back to school for my doctorate, and I was at the University of Southern California and doctoral program, and they were recruiting us for different departments. We were all basic doctoral students, but we had to specialize in which areas. And they came in, the different heads of the department, came in looking for slaves, people to do the research for them who are students. That's called slaves. And they came in from different areas of psychology. I'm talking about 1975. And somebody came in and said he's a neuropsychologist and he's looking for people to do, and we were all sitting there and wondering, what's he talking about? What's neuropsychology? And then he's explaining what neuropsychology is and what the areas of his research, and all of a sudden I had what's known, like this eureka experience, like, wow, there's a brain behind behavior. How fascinating. And previous to that, all education I was getting or that was really being meted out was more psychoanalytic and feelings and getting back and doing therapy, finding your inner self. And here was somebody talking about the brain is in charge of behavior. And as time went on, because it's been a while since 1975, I honed my skills, I got my doctorate, I got postdoctorate, and I've been head of the Department of Neuropsychology at Chariot Zedek for close to 26 years. At any rate, yesterday I spoke, also lunchtime, and I'll be able to do a comparison study of the sandwiches, about working in the emergency room. I'm the chief psychologist in the emergency room when there are terrorists. It's called MCEs, mass casualty events. When all hell breaks loose in the emergency room and you have to deal with all sorts of interesting cases. At any rate, again, here, there really was no room in the emergency room for the kind of psychoanalytic psychology that I was trained as, but yes, as a neuropsychologist, to understand how these people are reacting, what is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, what is it before it's happening, how might we alleviate some of the stressors that cause PTSD is the kind of work that we try to do in the emergency room. So today, what I'm going to talk about is what it is that we've given up. Now, I have a droid. I don't know how techie you guys are. You guys mean plural. But the people who chose droid, my feeling, the people who chose droid over iPhone are a little bit more techie. Also, they're cheaper, meaning the iPhone, I know in Israel and the United States, is about $50 to $100 a month just before you start downloading applications. And the droid is cheaper to run and does practically, I don't know what it doesn't do the same at this point in time. Maybe it's more user-friendly, but I keep tripping over myself trying to figure it out, the iPhone, and I as opposed to just doing it. At any rate, so here we are. I'm trying to figure out how I can understand what we've given up for this machinery in a way of teaching and getting it back and allowing ourselves to have choices. I mean, we're people. And we have human brains. We're not something with a microscopic brain. And we have choices. And yet, we've given over so many of our choices, our ability to prioritize the outlook, our ability, our judgment to masses of people who we check with in Twitter or in Facebook or in something else. Where are we in this whole thing? So, the area of the brain that I think we're talking about is the frontal part of the brain, and here it's green. Now, what is it that the frontal part of the brain does? It's very important for working memory. It's important for making choices based on information that you have and you can manipulate. I kind of have this weird sense of humor. Sorry. So I call the area of the brain that's in charge of working memory is the hippocampus, which is the Latin word for seahorse, because it looks like a seahorse. And I call it the bladder, because you can hold 7 ± 3. That's the statistical scientific information that you can hold, which is why telephone numbers internationally all over the world are 7 ± 3. Because technically some people, not me, but some people can call 144. I don't know what number here you call for information. In New York it's 411. In Israel it's 144. What is it here?
1234.
And then they'll tell you the number. If you have good working memory, better than good, then you can remember the whole number without writing it down and call it. If you don't, you call them 3 or 4 times, or maybe you look for a pencil and write it down. Or you could press hash or star and have it dial it for you for extra money. Anyway, that's working memory. Information that is at hand that you can use for making a decision. I want to tell you about this case. A very early case of neuropsychology from the 1800s, 1848 exactly, and it's a fellow called Phineas Gage from Vermont. And he got this spike that has a certain name that the next slide will tell us through his head. He lived. And what happened was we were able to see how somebody with frontal lobe damage behaves well before there was a MRI, CT, X-ray. So what happened to him, it's called a tamping iron, got blown through his skull. Okay, the left frontal brain was injured. He had an excellent physical recovery, but he had a dramatic personality change. He was described by people around him as no longer the old Gage. He was stubborn. Now, if any of you find yourself in any of these descriptions, don't tell us. It's okay. We don't have to share. I'm not that kind of psychologist. He was stubborn, lacked in consideration for others, had profane speech, and failed to execute his plans. Now, if any of you recognize your bosses in this, this may be a very interesting piece of information, because essentially what we're going to be talking about is executive function. We'll get there right away. Executive function is what the frontal lobe does. The frontal lobe has aspects to it, as we saw a second ago from what Phineas lost the ability to be sensitive to others, lost the ability to be flexible in his thinking, lost the ability to gauge his time and his energies. That's what the frontal lobe does when it works. And to understand it, we think of it in terms of a maestro and an orchestra, because there are lots of functions that the frontal lobe does and the rest of the brain does independently, and somehow it all comes back to the frontal lobe where it is put together and hopefully makes good music. So, is it the orchestra or is it the maestro? So there are directive capabilities of the mind, multiple in nature, not a single capacity. There's no one thing that we can say is executive function. I mean, no one function of the frontal lobe. It cues other mental health abilities, and it has direct control over perceptions, thoughts, actions, and to some degree, emotions. It's the place where the feedback from all the other separate lobes and areas of the brain goes. It's the clearinghouse. It's the emergency room. And where stuff ends up being triaged or organized in a way that a diagnosis can be made, if we're talking about in medical terms, or you get a clearer idea of what the case is that you're dealing with, because all the points are not separate points. You're able to put them together and act on them. And part of the neural circuits are rooted through the frontal lobe, as I just said. Okay. Now, the conductor metaphor meets the frontal lobe. So if we consider the frontal lobe as the conductor and the rest of the brain is the orchestra, you can't have a conductor, you know, waving his baton to an empty seats of an orchestra, because as good as he could be with that stick, he's not going to make any music. He'll have all the right movements, he'll flick his hair, he'll do all the stuff, but he's not going to hear anything. And alternatively, as good as the orchestra could be, without somebody organizing and having like the mathematic ability that a conductor has to have in order that everything meshes together, you need to have a conductor, and that makes the orchestra look good, and the orchestra makes the conductor look good. And we're talking about the brain. Interestingly, when you're dealing with executive function, for general problem solving, you really need to work with co-conductors. I mean, what kind of businesses or stuff are you in here? Are you lawyers? Raise your hand. Okay. Are you in high tech? Are you the high tech, the R&D of high tech, or are you, like, you write code and stuff like that? You sell it?
It's implementation.
Pardon?
Implementation.
Implementation?
It's a network. It's like a...
Okay. I have actually four kids. And my four kids are all somehow in high tech. I don't know, one of them to be doctors, one of them to be psychologists, one of my husband's rabbi and a lawyer. Anyway, my daughter is a head of a department at the Israel Museum that works on, her PhD is on digitizing imaging, and she wrote a language which she and my sons worked out is called Glyph. They made it up. It stands for something, but she's been speaking all over the world about Glyph, multilingual, I don't know, whatever. And another son has a degree, a master's in physics from Weizmann, and I wanted him to go on and get his doctorate, because I guess I'm too square to think that. But since that time, he has had five startups that he's sold. I don't know, he has had exits of five startups. Does that mean something to the businessy people here? Okay. So one company actually was launched here was the Skype phone a number of years ago. It was a Skype phone. So he and my other son, well, the three boys worked together. Each one was in the... IT department, and the other was wrote the code, and the other one's the marketing and idea person. I'm just amazed that they don't throw peas at each other and spaghetti and stuff that I remember they used to do really well. But they work together, and they seem to be quite successful. So I'm a little connected to that, very little, that side of the business. The point is, back to executive function, When you have two conductors and they work as co-conductors, essentially you have to understand the strengths and weaknesses of each of the conductors' conducting abilities. Like, let's say in your businesses or with clients of one sort or another, they may be on your same level, but if you understand their strengths and their weaknesses in the things that we're talking about today of executive function, then A, you won't be blindsided. Tell me if that's too American and you don't understand what I'm talking about. You might not be caught unawares, and something will, you know, like, where did this come from? But you'll understood them and what their abilities are and what their strengths are. Similarly, what their weaknesses are and how you might fill in those areas. So, again, I want to give you something that you could take with you and understand clinical neuropsychology, but functional neuropsychology, how you can use it in the workplace. So here are the functions in front of you of a conductor and an orchestra. Now, when you meet people, and we'll come to this later, with ADD, I always say people with ADD, attention deficit disorder, today it's known as ADHD, with or without H, H being hyperactivity. So we all know people, and if they get through school emotionally unblemished, that the school system hasn't killed their neshama or their creativity, they get into business. If they have good executive function, they are very successful. Because talk about parallel processing and doing 17 things at the same time and getting them done and making, being like a flying dervish. Dervish, is that one of your animals here? Like, making everything crazy, but they're seeing and working on an image that they can see very clearly. Of course, there's 14 images that they're seeing, and they can't generally express themselves verbally, because generally that area of the brain, the left hemisphere, which is language, is not as well developed with them. So they can go, just do it. And do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, and they can see it. They're like a GPS without the lady talking to you. Just get there. Okay, so the functions of a conductor are to inhibit, shift, act flexibly. And if we think about poor old Phineas, he couldn't shift between one thing or another. He couldn't... It's like the husband, the wife gets a different hairstyle and he goes, you know, like, what happened? How can you do this to me? You know, he's used to one thing. You have to be flexible in order to think in ways that are out of the box. Modulate emotions. Know how to have the emotions and know how to use them and be connected with them, but know when too much is too much or something is inappropriate. Initiate working memory, as we said before, planning, organizing, self-monitoring, and evaluating. Like, how am I doing today? Is this working out? What kind of feedback am I getting from my environment? My environment being co-workers, or if you're a computer person, is my computer responding to me appropriately? Okay. Oops, I really wanted to go backwards. Now I go backwards. Okay. Where was I? I'm up here. Okay. Hold on. Okay. The functions of the orchestra are more right hemispheric, that involving perception, attention. Part of the language processes, like the music of language, the process, how things are said, not just the words in staccato, but like knowing how to say it in a way that your secretary doesn't go on a snit for the rest of the week because you said the same thing you could have said four different ways in a certain way that she can't take. The same words, but the music and the language and the way in which you said it gave messages that you certainly didn't want to give. Sensory inputs. How sensitive are you to smells and feels and this? How sensitive are the people you're working with? And if you know that this is something that they are sensitive to, how can you use it for them or against them? I mean, all's fair in love and war. And how can you use it in a way that will make you and your the thing that you want to sell do more successful? Social skills, understanding nonverbal communication. What is somebody saying when they are behaving in a certain way? And if you're just listening to the words, you're not getting it because you're not watching their facial, their eyebrow, their this, their that. I'll just tell you, if you want an idea of somebody who has no social skills, the syndrome that is most famous for very poor and if not no social skills is something called is autistic
Asperger's.
Well, Asperger's one. There's a whole spectrum of autistic disorders. It goes from language disorder. There's a whole spectrum that's on a range of communication disorder. Asperger's is high functioning, or there is Asperger's and high functioning autism, where the majority of people with autism are not high functioning. But if you're in the workplace and somebody is this kind of special genius in one thing, and talks in a staccato kind of a way and has one area that he or she knows, and I say he because it's 5-1 boys, men, then he's got areas that he can succeed in, but he certainly cannot understand nonverbal communication, and that can get him and people who work with him into misunderstandings at best, and can make him be bullied and manipulated at worst. I had a case where they called me into the pediatric department and they said, we have this patient who is blind but he can see. This is, you know, as I said, I like the stuff so weird. So I came down to see him, and it actually was an Arab teenager who had been to Syria or someplace in order to get a kidney. It's very hard to get kidneys, I don't know about here, but it's hard to get kidneys. You're on a long list, and you have to be generally healthy in order to get it. And so what the Arabs do who have some money is they go to a neighboring country, one that we couldn't because they take our heart out, forget about the kidneys, buy a kidney from a poor person. And this is all done, it's not legal or UN approved, but they buy a kidney from a poor person. That poor person has another kidney. In the meantime, he has raised the gross national product of his country by this paying the doctor, paying nurses, getting the hospital, and himself and his family are going to be eating for the next couple of years because he sold his kidney. Anyway, the kid came back, and we saw him after he came back, and he was behaving in a very odd way. He couldn't see. He said he couldn't see, but I gave him a glass of water, and I'm putting this down. I put out a glass of water. He took it with two hands so he could see it, and he started to lap it up like a puppy. That was interesting. And then I'm talking to him. I speak a lot of languages to make the patients feel like I'm trying, or a lot of my patients are brain damaged, so I always say that my language skills and theirs are about on the same level. But so I was talking to him in my broken American accented Arabic, and I noticed that his eyebrow was moving and one of his fingers. And I just happened to glance at myself. I speak with my hands, And I noticed that that was my fingers that were moving like this. So bottom line, because it's a whole study that I wrote up and was published, there is a condition called Kluver-Busey syndrome. Two Swiss doctors, Mr. Kluver, Dr. Kluver, Dr. Busey, B. Kluver, K-L-U with an umlaut E-R, K-L-U-V-E-R, and dash Busey, B-U-C-Y, discovered that if you take away the two temporal lobes of a monkey, they will exhibit the following behaviors. They will have visual agnosia. They will be blind, but they can see. They will eat anything, act in a very strange way. They will pay attention to extraneous visual stimuli, but not to obvious visual stimuli. Anyway, we found that there was a period when they did, because of the neuropsych assessment, they tested him with certain type of test electro, a certain type of EEG where they stick two electrodes in your head and they run electricity to see what happened, and they saw that he had a problem with both temporal lobes, and the suggestion was that in the course of this wonderful operation where he got the kidney, they also happened to not give him enough oxygen, and so he lost that function, and he became a case of Kluver-Busey without having to remove the temporal lobes. Okay, so the point of the matter is that we see things that, and I want you to take away from this talk, we learn things about people, how they are connections with the brain and behavior and how they are thinking by watching how they behave. And if we meet people who can't understand visual cues, and certainly in nonverbal communication, we have information on them that will help us work with them or against them, depending on what we need. Again, it's not like one thing, executive function. It's a number of things that need to be coordinated. Now this, I'm going to put it on my website, so if this is interesting to you, it really goes backwards from the bottom up. And we see the developmental model of executive functional capabilities. I'm not going to go through it. I imagine you can read and you'll look at it. If I wanted to explain it to you in a developmental way, I would say the first thing that we do is perceive. We sense our mothers, we feel them, we nurse, we see things around us before we understand. We focus. The distance an infant can see is the distance between the mother's eye and her breast. That's the distance an infant can focus on. So these are things that are very important to understand when you're dealing with people. Like some people stand very close to you. It may be cultural. We find in the Middle East, like Egyptian people stand much closer to you than German people. In Israel, we have a little bit of everything, and so we can make the people have done studies to judge the distance between two people. Now, in business or in anything, you can have the sense that why is this person coming so close to me, or what's going on? And there may be an issue of focusing. There may be an issue of culture that is important for you to have a handle on. One of the things that executive function does, it allows us to have self-determination, foresight, long-term planning, and goal generation. And we can choose our goals. And as good as the iPod, iPad, all the office equipment is, if you don't know the information, like giving a kid a computer for math, if he doesn't know how to put it in, a handheld calculator to do his math exams, if he doesn't know how to put in the numbers in which what goes first, what goes second. Doesn't matter if he knows that you're supposed to divide it, he can make a real mess. So we can't say that the machinery has taken away our choices or our abilities of self-determination. We have to know and we have to understand how to use them. I'm certainly not saying throw all that stuff out. I have, you know, my husband and I are like a four-computer family, maybe five, just the two of us. And every one of them is very important and has its own function. So I certainly am not telling you not to use it. I'm telling you to use it sensibly and to determine and to know that you're the one who, A, can unplug it, and, B, can make it work for you. So what are the four areas of involvement in executive function? Intrapersonal, control of relations with yourself. Interpersonal, control of relationships to another. Environment, understanding and controlling your behavior in relation to the natural and man-made environment. And symbol system, which is controlling relation by symbols. That's what language is. It's symbols that we have, and they can also be non-verbal symbols that mean something. Years ago, my husband was the rabbi of the Syrian community of Los Angeles. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Syrian Jews. I was the rabbi's wife, and I came out into the living room where I had a number of people, and they're telling me who wants tea, who wants coffee. I say, okay, five teas, and they're all going, ah, you're cursing us. And I didn't know this. But this is the Khamsa hand, the five that people wear as a good luck chain, five fingers. But also if you do it this way, like I said, five T's, it was a curse. So it's a cultural thing that you have to understand, and this is a symbol. In every language, there are different symbols that you can do to the driver who's cutting you off. And we'll let that go by. But so there's a symbol system, not just a language system. That's very important. Again, there are different clinical problems where there are issues in executive function, and we psychologists, psychiatrists, have our own Torah, which is called the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, where we code it and say it's like a Chinese menu. You have to have four in group A and three in group B and two in group C, and then you've got this disorder. Yippee. The things that are in front of you are various disorders in which executive function is affected. We said before, autism, Asperger's, conduct disorder, those are those little nasty kids who burn cats just to see how much fun that is. Oppositional defiant disorder, which is kind of explanatory. Depression, anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder. Right now, Pesach time, you get to see all sorts of people where their obsessive compulsive disorder is finally something that everybody in the neighborhood wants to have. And is not like feels compelled to live with them for the rest of the year. But right now, okay, how are you cleaning now? How are you doing it? Like during the rest of the year, cleaning the sink with a toothbrush might not be something that we all want to emulate. Fetal alcohol syndrome. I don't know how big alcoholism is a condition here, but with the American Indians and Eskimos, it's a very big condition. And it's what it's if mothers drink alcohol in the first trimester of their pregnancy, it can cause physiologic damage. The children are born without a philtrum. A philtrum is that little like mark on your upper lip where, according to certain midrashim, if an angel hits you and you forget everything you know, that's why you have one. Well, they don't have one, and they're generally retarded, so the angel flew over them on every which level. Prenatal drug exposure is things that can cause problems in the development of the brain and affect executive function. Okay, which is, I said before, the ADHD with or without hyperactivity. But if you have good EF, executive function, you're a successful business person. And that's what I call a Judaism, because my name is Judy. Joke. Never mind. The more ability gets challenged, the more ability you need as life goes on, the more challenging it is to somebody who has poor executive function. So the more ability that you have that is needed in your environment, you see a person who has good executive function or a person who is bad, and it comes across also in their ability level. You can't move ahead beyond a certain point if you don't have executive function. What can we do? We can, if we don't have it automatically from the inside, but we know that it exists and we know what the areas are that are problematic in us, then we can affect the change from the outside to our affect, to our feelings on the inside. We can apply external controls. We can use a stopwatch if we tend to talk too much when we're giving a presentation, like now. I don't know, how much time do I have left? 5 minutes and you're not cursing me? Okay. We can force ourselves, we can have cues on the side that help us bypass the areas. And we can help with mindfulness. Mindfulness is a way of saying that you're hearing your body, that you're paying attention to what your body is feeling. Your fidgetiness is coming because you're cold, you're hungry, you have to go to the bathroom. You know, how can you do that and not... How can you listen to what your body is saying? That's mindfulness. And the appreciation of seeing and feeling your affect and the effect it's having on your emotions and the effect it's having on yourself and other people. I found this slide, which I really liked. This is the area, this is the frontal part of the brain. This is, we have like a gut feeling, which is more emotional. You're picking up signs of smells, sounds, feelings, something. But when you put it through your, the fine sieve of your frontal lobe, it's helping you make decisions, helping you with your reasoning. Okay, so in summary, form goals, reason, think. And then your behavior is going to be effective in both the routine automatic things that you do as well as novel situations. And we can teach ourselves to think and organize those skills. And we are in charge of these stupid little machines. And we can use them to help us and not give away ourselves to them. So, thank you. Whoops. That was supposed to be end good day. 1 second. Thank you. And good day and hello.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vicky, you want to give it? Oh.
I've heard it suggested that because children know that they can Google information, that they are not trying to remember that they're not trying to remember the information because they know where to find it next time round, and that it's actually affecting the memory of children because they're not exercising their memory as they would have been before being able to look things up on Uncle Google. What would you think of that?
I want God to bless Google and their stock should continue to go up. When I started, the size of the pediatrics book was this thick. Now it's yo thick. There's so much more information out than there used to be. Giving somebody a fishing rod today is teaching them how to research and how to find information. And it isn't just Googling. It isn't just writing the word. The person who gets the best and the most fine-tuned information is a person who knows how to research, It's the same person who used to be able to benefit from sitting in the library and doing research, and now they could sit at home and do the research. It's not just like one thing you put in one name. And I think if we teach our children how to use the science and data that's been collected, that's out there, there's no way one child or one person could have done it themselves. And so we're helping them benefit. If we're saying, you don't have to do anything, just Google it, it's still teaching them something. They're learning how to research information. So I guess I'm not the right person to add. They're learning how to do things. But like anything else, your brain is a muscle, and if you don't use it, you lose it. So if you don't use anything in your body, it goes into just, it becomes incapable. And I'll tell you a story about a lady, Lady Jacobowitz, who was the wife of Lord Jacobowitz, the chief rabbi of Great Britain. So she took a group of women in their upper 60s on a trip to China. And one woman's handbag was stolen. And she did not have one telephone number she could call because she had speed dial on everybody. Her daughter was 2, her husband was 1, her this was that. Not one single solitary phone number. The one thing that taught me is don't use speed dial. So I guess that answers your question. Try to remember as many phone numbers as you can. However, when you have kids like I do who have 3 or 4 cell phone numbers, I'm in number overload, and then they change. So I have one number that I can get them at. For the most part, I email them or text message them. And my machine remembers, which is the best way to do that. So yes and no. I think we can use the technology, and we should understand that what we're doing and that there is something at risk. Don't put all your numbers on speed dial. Thank you. More?
Thank you.
What happened to that couple?
I thought that was a joke.
The couple that came to you, what happened to them?
Oh, they stayed together. I don't know. I'm very cynical, and if somebody comes for premarital counseling, I feel they shouldn't get married. You know, like, why do you need premarital counseling? But the way the dating goes in certain communities, they really don't know each other. They've never really had an opportunity to be in a co-ed situation and learn how to be with boys or how to be with girls, how to hang loose, and everything becomes much more stressful than is needed, and you're putting that into building a relationship and doing the mundane things like the laundry of, like, what is this? You know, what am I doing? How did I get here? And I see quite a few yeshiva boys in Israel who wake up one morning and they have 2.3 children, and they wake up and they don't know how they got that woman who's here nagging them. Where are their carpets? Where's their car? They had a pool last time they looked in their country of origin. They have none of that. They're in some dinky apartment next to some yeshiva, and they're supposed to go to that yeshiva for hours every day. They never were in yeshiva for hours every day. They did it as they were launched into the premarital world in order to get find the proper wife, but they wake up a couple years later and they really are in hell, wondering how to get out of this, what to do. They never see a way of them getting any sort of money that could qualify for the lifestyle that they had and dream about, and they just have responsibilities. So I think that as a community, we have responsibility to our children to educate them as they reach adolescence, before they reach older adolescence, and to help them learn skills, A, to deal with each other and to deal with people, and be there to listen as a parent when they get married and be readily able to offer help, that and not like cut them. We did the right thing. They're married. Bye. No. So it's never over. And I'm telling you this as a great grandmother. You're always in charge someplace. Best is to write the checks and to keep your mouth shut, but also a little direction doesn't hurt.
Thank you very much.